Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live some weeks on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Check my Twitter feed, ANNZAC, for more. Enjoy the show. Welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Bertie. Jacob Chapman is here. Jacob, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
This is our first live show on YouTube. We have not done the show live on YouTube. We're using this janky old version of live stream that I use sometimes for things and like an IRC chat from... Yeah, anyway, now we're on YouTube. You can find us on YouTube/ANNZAC. That's where the show will be for now, for the foreseeable future. So thanks everyone for coming by and coming by the YouTube channel. That's what we'll be from now on. How you doing, Jacob?
I'm doing spiffy.
We're in, it's weirdly busy right now.
Spiff.
It's a little weirdly busy
spiff
right now.
Spiff and span.
Yeah. It's a little weirdly busy right now.
Yeah.
It feels like.
Been writing my fingers off. I'm surprised they didn't just pop off at the joints.
Yeah, right? So,
it's like,
talk a little bit about, like, you've been working on some big stuff, so, like, talk a little bit about what you're writing.
I've been writing a bunch about Scum's Wish every week, but right now I was finishing up a review on Wolf's Rain, which was just very emotionally intense because it was one of my favorite anime, and then revisiting it, I was fully expecting to revisit it and be like, oh, this isn't as good as it once was when I saw it and just got really attached to it because it just happened to be my thing. And I was wrong. It's actually way better than I remember it being.
Really? Like, because it's...
This is actually... Like, well, it was commenting on levels that I wasn't picking up on when I first saw it. When I first saw it, I was picking up on sort of the folkloric aspect and the romantic aspect and the mythological aspect of it, and that it was sort of like creating this new...
The Crispin Freeman angles.
The Crispin Freeman angles. And I loved all that stuff. I loved the spiritual... I loved what it had to say about faith and spirituality. I loved, it, like, the pseudo-religion that it came up with and the way that it used that to contextualize, like, an end-of-the-world scenario, an apocalypse that was built out of a bunch of different religions and ideas about mortality and all that stuff. And now, seeing it now, all that stuff still holds true, but the more concrete details, rather than the ephemeral stuff, or the ethereal stuff, I guess, the more concrete details of the world jumped out to me. The specific artistic and political references they're pulling from that I wasn't really aware of when I first watched it jump out to me more. And all that stuff combines to be like, oh, this is a real masterpiece. And so I'm trying to figure out a way to write about that that's very specific and clear about why the show is good if you haven't seen it. And hopefully people will enjoy it if they haven't.
Well, I'm looking forward to reading it. I have not read a single word of it yet. I guess it'll be out on the site pretty soon here. But, I mean, you were watching that out in the living room. And I'm like, man, am I not in the mood for this? It's so...
I'm in a glass case of emotions.
Despairing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man. I mean, I love that show. I think it might be like, we were talking about this. It's like, I have kind of a top three, an eternal top three. It's like Wolf's Rain, Evangelion, and Utena. And like, they're kind of all, like, I have a favorite of those. Mm-hmm. Like, my favorite is Evangelion, I think. But like, they're all pretty much hold the same place in my heart. Mm-hmm. So like, I knew it was this good back then. But now I sit down and I'm like, I don't know. I'm not in the mood for something that's that relentlessly fucking sad. And it has a hopeful-ish message.
It's a very cosmic message that you can interpret very hopefully or, you know, very cynically depending on your own worldview, which is what big cosmic stories like that do. They act as a little bit of a Rorschach test for the person who watches them. But, you know, yeah, it's a downer, but it's a very fulfilling downer. So
yeah, it's still like, man, that show is good. I'm really glad it's out and available and people can buy it, you know. And those Blu-rays look fine. They look as good as that show is capable of looking without remaking the whole fucking thing.
For a DigiPaint show from 2003, it looks pretty good to me. Like the specifically the art style and like the line weight and the color palette that they chose. It's a blurry ass DigiPaint show, but like it's pretty good. Like it's blown up, but it's like, well, even this blown up, it's really it's really well drawn, so it doesn't bother me as much.
Yeah. No, it's a good-looking show, even though it was produced at 320 by 240 or whatever fucking horrible tiny-ass resolution they made that show in. God, DigiPaint. Man, what a mistake. Not future-proof in the DigiPaint slightest.
DigiPaint was a mistake. It's nothing but trash.
It really was. It was. Yeah. Anyway, so I'm looking forward to that. We should talk about the stuff we talk about, you know, weekly, right? Even though I feel like... So, let's talk about Tiny the Evil. Are you still... You're not watching that.
I am. I just don't see much in it.
Neither do I. And, like, but here's the thing, though. Like, I do still think that you were wrong in your initial assessment of it. Being
well, I was
like,
guessing. I don't, you know, I know, like, but I could be wrong.
Do you see what I'm saying now? That it does not appear to be framing it as like she's so smart and you should be like her. Like, it's not holding this character up as like.
Well, I didn't say it was you should be like her. I said it was she will be eventually vindicated because she's been put in a situation where these emotions are a boon to her instead of just being kind of a crutch in modern society, which is it's like the person who's like, well, in medieval times I'd be a badass, and you're right, it's not doing that, but what it is doing is kind of not that interesting to me, so you should elaborate.
So what the show is doing is kind of what it feels like it's doing. Now, I don't know if this is actually the way it's going to bear out or not, but the way it feels like right now, and I wish I had... I am old, so all of my references are from 20 years ago. But if you remember in the movie, there's a thing called Grand Guignol Theater, which is it was popularized a long time ago. But there's an example of it in the movie Interview with the Vampire. Uh-huh. If you remember that movie with Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt, where there's they go down to this underground theater and there's like a stage play, and what they tell are these like macabre sort of violent tales of people getting sort of their ironic comeuppance. Uh-huh. Like it's a lot, and they're usually really violent. But like typically they're showing you like a subject of like, look at this pathetic creature, let's watch him suffer even, and let's watch him try to better his situation and suffer as a result. That's kind of the Grand Guignol thing. So, well, it's part of Grand Guignol, but that's also a storytelling tradition, like an old storytelling tradition. So like, I feel like this is kind of in the same vein as that. That's the way it feels like they're going with it. So, and I find that fairly interesting. I still... Anytime Being X shows up, which is supposed to be God, the show is way more interesting. It's suddenly really interesting, whereas the rest of the time it is just kind of bullshit military Ozark stuff that I don't care about.
I think that from
and the fact of the matter is, like, they're just restaging the invasion of Poland, which is. Anyway.
From what I have heard, it makes more sense when people are like, "Oh, the anime is kind of structured very differently from the light novels." From what I have heard, the anime is more like trying to draw on and repeat the appearances of specific characters. Like, it's not fabricating anything, but it's like cutting stuff that isn't about like recurring characters that they can have. Because, as I understand correctly from what I've read, like the light novels are mostly descriptions of like characterless descriptions of equipment and troop movements and stuff like that. And so,
sure.
Which stands to reason. But,
and there's whole episodes of the show that go by where it's just that.
Yeah, where it's like...
It's just that, and they're literally restaging the invasion of Poland. And if you know about the invasion of Poland, it's like, okay. Is it just trying to be like, hey, you know how this went.
Yeah.
This is like that.
Here's
like,
the specifics.
I guess I'm supposed to pat myself on the head for knowing, like, those... Anyway.
Yeah, but in becoming slightly more character focused, it is different from a lot of the military otaku stuff in that it's not like it's not about a badass. You're right. It's about somebody who's a badass in terms of their how they apply themselves to military strategy, but they don't want to be there. It's very I wasn't supposed to be here today.
Yeah,
like, they're doing all this accidentally, which makes them again it makes her more badass, I guess, or whatever the heck they're doing there. But like, it is funny that. She takes absolutely no pleasure in it, and she is 100% miserable, and God is kind of winning this battle of the wills between them. I mean, her will holds out, but God is winning in terms of, like, fate keeps dealing her a bad hand. So
here's what I'm hoping. I hope there's no way this is going to be it. But imagine if the end of the show is that Being X turned out to be Tanya's own ego. Imagine if they actually took it to its actual emotional conclusion, which that would be the actual emotional conclusion of the show. If it were revealed that Being X is Tanya's own ego and that's what he's actually fighting all this time, that would be like, wow, No way.
That wouldn't make sense with the god's motivations as they.
Yeah, I mean, but it would. Okay, but it's not like totally far fetched.
No,
I mean,
you'd have to back right a little bit, but.
Yeah, but that would be a dramatically, like a much more interesting way to approach this.
Yeah, of course it would. Definitely be. almost anything would be more.
And I was kind of hoping that maybe it was going to go in that direction, and it's not, but it still has something to say that is not. Be a fascist. It's mm-hmm. not saying that. So
yeah, it's not a pro-fascism message, pretty much at all. There's nothing pro-fascism about it. It's just very. I really get off to military stuff. It's just fine. That's its own thing. It usually isn't accompanied by this kind of plot. In fact, nothing is accompanied by this specific plot. It's a weird plot. So you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
Anyway.
Sure. Whatever. It's very shrug. It's not something that I get upset about. Like. Stuff like Gate and Mahoka, like, makes my skin crawl. Tanya the Evil is just shrug. I don't have any positive or negative feelings toward it. It just exists, I guess. That's kind of my take.
Well, it's entertaining. Mm-hmm. I'm still entertained by it.
Yeah, it's okay. I don't find it that entertaining to BH.
Hey, so a show that you do find entertaining that I did finally watch is called The Wish of a Scum.
All right. The Wishes of Scums.
The Scum's Wish.
The Scum's Wish. Sure is.
Scum's Wish.
Mm-hmm.
I watched four episodes. There's one that came out today, and I didn't watch that one. Yeah. But I watched 2 through 5. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, man, that show is really good. Hey, don't watch a bunch of it in a row.
No, don't. Don't do that. It's very lurid, but not in a sexy way.
Don't do that.
Way.
It's just
want to get depressed about vaginas? Scum's
Wish. Yeah, it's a bad feeling. It is a bad feelings marathon, like, for sure. I felt very bad for, like, 2.5 hours. But it was really good. Like, really well-written. Had some problems with it. I figure we can get into those. But the thing that I really, really like about it is how upfront and honest it is with these feelings. I feel like you can tell like right away how interesting it is in episode 2 when they introduce the little like, this is my big brother and you're my prince and I'm your princess. And they immediately cut to like the dark heart of those feelings.
Yeah,
and she's like, you should actually just tell her you're not interested in it. You're just doing this to sate your own ego. Like, mm-hmm. You know, she just confronts that, like, immediately up front, and that's super refreshing.
Yeah, well, Hanabi is, I don't want to say unrealistically so, because it does seem realistic to me, but she is, like, the uber-most self-aware 16-year-old on the face of the earth, which is good, because she's not self-aware in a way, like, I know everything and I'm on top of it. Like, she's a mess, but she knows exactly why she's a mess, and she can detail it in like... dialogue that is like really relatable and like it's earnest, and it's like, oh, this is like somebody like pouring out their real feelings in a way where you directly feel it. They're not overly poetic about it, but they're not like so blunt that it's obvious. It's just very insightful to emotion.
I mean, they have like Rei Ayanami-esque monologues about being alone.
Yeah, but I mean, like,
I'm not saying
everything that comes out of her mouth is novel. I'm saying like she does have lines of dialogue and lines of internal monologue where it's like, oh, I've never heard that specific emotion put that specific way before. That's really revealing.
Yeah, that's kind of the quality of the show. There's a lot of that, like a lot of, hey, I don't typically see like that kind of emotion expressed in this particular way, and it's really relatable. Like, it's especially if you've had, like, a bunch of shitty, like, relationships where it's just two people hurting each other, for sure,
yeah.
You will relate to, like, plenty of the bad shit that goes down and, like, the terrible things that these people, like, do to each other.
Yeah.
Like, you will definitely relate to it.
Yeah, and I feel like I should be specific. Like, specifically this show, it's not just about, like, ooh, lurid, like... unhealthy sexual relationships. Like, it's not... Yeah, it's not just that. Specifically, like, it is... The theme is, like... really specific. It's about like how sexuality, especially when it's brand new to you, as it is for these characters, how sexuality defines your self-image. Like, and some people are never able to do this, but like healthy sexuality is should be divorced from your self-image, like any number of things that that you kind of learn are like, this doesn't qualify your worth as a person.
Yeah.
So basically the whole show is about people whose sexuality defines their amount of self-worth and how that goes down, because it's like 6, 7, 8 different variations of what that means. But it's like, you know, so that's what it's about. So if you've ever felt like, you know, like you have sexual dysfunction or like difficulties relating to sexual feelings or to relationships because it's so tied into who you feel you are as a person. Like, that's what Scum's Wish is about, which is a really strong, that's a very fertile ground for storytelling. So there's a lot of good stuff in there.
Yeah. Admittedly, like, the only character I think I, like is the main character, Hanabi. Mm-hmm. Mugi, I don't care.
But Sanae is so sweet.
Who?
The lesbian girlfriend.
Yeah, but she's just,
bad for her.
Well, I mean, I do, but, she's accepted this really, mm-hmm. kind of fucked up relationship.
It's
and
bad.
Has just decided that that's what she... That's not what she wants, but she's decided that's what she wants. And, yeah, I guess that character, too, is okay. Mm-hmm. I like those two. The rest of them are kind of the rest of them kind of feel like, I'm like, well, you know.
We're way more in Hanabi's head than anybody else.
Yeah, that's the point of view character. So
I feel like I understand all of
it. It makes sense. So the problem I have with it, the thing I didn't, really love was the antagonist or the girl who turns out to be the antagonist, which is
shocking.
So this show is about two people who are fucking mm-hmm. and they actually want to be fucking two other people. Mm-hmm. And it's two students who would actually rather be fucking their teachers.
Right.
Their teachers, meanwhile, are involved with all kinds of shit. Mm-hmm. At least one of them is.
Right.
One of them
is a very boring guy, and the other one is crazy secret psychopath.
There's a piano teacher that the dude in this situation, Mugi, is in love with, mm-hmm. secretly thinks he's in love with, and she turns out to be this, hyper-manipulative, sociopathic, super bitch, mm-hmm. super villain type of manipulative character.
Yeah, super villain to the extent of, like a little evil laughter and twisted smile kind of super villain.
Yeah, stuff. Yeah, okay. and honestly, that rang false. This was a show that everything touched on a really good I was oh wow, this is kind of relationship writing you just don't see in anime and manga ever. You don't ever see this kind of thing. Stuff like Flowers of Evil, Evangelion, but
yes, right.
It's once every 20 years or something like that, right? It's not a common thing. Mm-hmm.
Both of those stories, interestingly, are based very specifically from a boy's perspective and boy's sexuality, and this is very female in its sexuality.
Right. And so I kind of admittedly at first I was this feels kind of sexist that this character is such a this is how these women treat each other. They're hyper manipulative and competitive about stuff appearance. And she literally just outright states well, being attractive is so great. And there's nothing else in life but to have people think that you're hot. To steal men. That's a cartoon, and the rest of it's so nuanced and everything. And the thing is, people who view relationships and stuff like that, ensnaring men as a competition, that's a thing. That is definitely a thing that women actually do. But they won't outright state that as their motivation for why they are. They're not that, I'm a villain. Uh-huh. They're not being manipulative is great. That's basically what she says.
Right. So here's the reason. So I disagree that this is a problem, and here's the reason why. Because she specifically only shows that side of herself to Hanabi. And I think that the reason she does this... Now, yeah, it's a little bit melodramatic and archetypal, but so is the show. The show deals with slightly exaggerated versions of very real human emotions. So, and her as a sociopath, as a psychopath, I don't feel like her behavior is beyond the pale. It makes complete sense. As far as her directly saying, no, this is what I do. This is what I do to feel fulfilled. I steal men, and I'm going to steal your man. To Hanabi specifically, I think she says that to her specifically because she sees a kindred spirit in Hanabi. She knows that Hanabi is on the path to becoming like her, and it makes her happy. It's like misery loves company, and she's seeing that future for Hanabi. And in episode 6, which you didn't get to, it definitely goes that route, because I was feeling it before, but Hanabi 100% has a Luke Skywalker I'm turning to the dark side sort of a thing.
Okay.
I think it's a little exaggerated, but that teacher representing her dark future if she continues to use people to kind of try and fill the void is good, because they're so different. Her teacher is a malignant narcissist. She's a sociopath because she can't empathize with anybody. While Hanabi has the opposite problem. She empathizes with everyone and thinks everybody's feelings are more valid than her. She's really self-hating. So they're completely different, but it's saying, regardless of what kind of person you are, leading this kind of life will result in this. So I think they're saying, it's not that their personalities are the same. It's saying that... pouring yourself into how many sexual conquests you can have will lead you down this path. So which I think is valuable, but yeah, it's a little cartoonish, but I still felt it was realistic enough to, you know, to
buy. I felt like all the other characters have been given these like super nuanced, really realistic, really reasonable, like justifications for why they were doing the thing they were doing. And like a character like that, I feel like would have equally false sounding justifications. Like I understand the character is probably going to change, but I feel like her justification for it would have been more nuanced, more realistic, more relatable, like something like, you know, I acknowledge that attractiveness equals strength or something like that. Something where she's motivating it to herself as like, this makes me strong rather than I just like being manipulated.
Right. Well, she says that in private to herself. And I think if she ever has to, like, my guess is, I don't know what happens, but I'm assuming that if the male student who loves her, if Mugi finds out who she really is, she's going to use those more rational justifications to him.
Yeah.
But to Hanabi, who she's in this position of superiority over and is like has strong emotions about because she sees so much of herself in Hanabi, it's just going to be emotional id crying out where she's right. Like, this is great and I'm better than you, you know, she's a little more evil, you know.
But yeah, no, I get it, man. It's not a strong criticism. Like I said, I'm not saying like, whoa, this is a huge problem. It's just like if I had one thing to say, that was a little bit of my takeaway. Like,
oh, yeah.
All the other characters seem super nuanced. This one in particular, yeah. So it was just a little jarring. But that's a great show. Like, really, really well written. I like the way it looks. Like, you know, the art, the direction on it sometimes I feel like he's got like
sets, so.
Well, I feel like that guy's like got like four tricks and he uses them in every episode. Mm-hmm. So like now that we've seen all those tricks, it's kind of right.
The musical score and the acting is a lot better than the directing. The directing's not bad. It's just you're right. It's a little like standard. I guess it's very laid back because I think it's letting the performances kind of take over and the music take over.
True.
But yeah, but the art's really pretty. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, the chat. Thanks to the chat. There's a manga for this. Mm-hmm. They're not spoiling it. Yeah, you should watch Scum's Wish if you want to go behind a paywall. Mm-hmm. You're going to pay for Amazon Prime and then Amazon Anime Strike. You can watch probably the best show of the season.
Fleece those weebs. Fleece them.
Fleece them. Open those wallets. Engaging a passionate community.
Anyway.
What is passionate mean
moving
again?
On.
Exploitable? Is that what passionate means? Anyway. Did you watch anything you wanted to bring up this week from this week's anime
of releases? Let me think.
Looking over the schedule quickly, did anything stand out?
Yeah, right. So, this is probably going to come up, in the questions or something like that, but Dragon Maid, apparently raised some hackles this week, so there's that.
Dragon Maid raised hackles with the dub again?
No.
Was a dub thing, though. There was another dub controversy.
Oh, there was another?
Yeah.
Hear about this one, but I just...
She changed, you know I'm not a slut to don't slut shame me. There you go. 2017.
I remember when Funimation used to put the word emo in all their dubs. That was an interesting time. Mm-hmm. That was like 2011 or so.
Yeah.
Emo was already out of fashion.
That one, I can't take as much issue with that one as the last one.
Mm-hmm.
The last one was like, obviously you're deciding on a character choice here and ignoring a long-standing trope like that everyone who watches Yuri anime knows about. Mm-hmm. That one was a bad... This one is like, okay, what?
Right. Yeah.
No, so what about the show actually got people worked up? I didn't hear about it.
Okay, so... Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid is very, very sweet, but it's also very sexual, and it's been this way since the beginning. And so people got a little weird about, so the little girl dragon, this is not going to end the way you think it's going to end.
Good.
The little girl dragon has entered, like, elementary school, and she's classmates with a girl who's, like, she's, like, the class bully, but she's secretly, like, she's tsundere, she's secretly, like, all soft and mushy on the inside, and she's obviously a budding lesbian. And she's like, what are these feelings? Like starting with the little dragon girl. So it's like two little kindergarten girls hanging out in her room, and she's like, getting all like blushy and freaking out when the dragon girl sits on her lap or when they play Twister or something like that. And it didn't bother me because it's not like gazy, it's not like gross sexual, but it's just like, okay, obviously like this girl has a crush on this other girl, and they're like they're kindergartners or whatever. But it didn't gross me out, but I understand people being uncomfortable watching it. Like, it makes sense. It didn't
gross me out. How is it framed?
There's no, like, leering on body parts or anything. It's just,
I hope not on kindergartners.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's just, like, the dragon girl sits in her lap, and it's just, like, a mid-range shot of the two of them, and she comes over and sits on her lap, and then she goes, and she turns red. You know, and then, like, they snuggle, and she turns red, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay. It did not bother me. I thought it was perfectly fine. I thought it was cute, but shrug.
Well, it's all in execution. It's all in context. Right.
Mm-hmm. But the other thing...
So was the joke that she was getting aroused by this girl sitting on her lap?
Well, the joke is...
Is that the joke? Because that's a gross joke. That's a disgusting...
Well, it's not necessarily sexual. It's just, it's like romantic, or both, or whatever. It's like...
Moe?
No, she's in love with her. She's like... I have a crush. She doesn't really
this
know.
This is two kindergartners interacting with each other.
Yeah, or maybe they're first or second. Well, they're like little bitty.
So kids. She's blushing.
Yes.
Oh, what's the problem?
Because she's like blushing and
like
sweating.
You would see that and like you would.
She's
would
like
see
blushing
like...
and sweating. It's not like a cute moe blush. It's like, like what are these feelings? Like
you know that. What I feel like I'm doing right now? I feel like I'm asking you to describe me something and I have like some sort of checklist for whether or not this would be appropriate. And that's a bullshit way to judge anything.
She likes her. Like she likes her. It's obviously romantic. But
you watched it and thought it was just cute and funny.
Yeah, but I understand why it would make people uncomfortable because it is obviously romantic. It's not just like, oh, I like you too. It's like...
Jacob, why are you such a hypocrite taking it so easy on obvious, what do they call this stuff?
It's Lowly framing. Bait. It's framing. It's 100% framing. Is it about like...
Dude, I understand.
Sexy, or is it about
you don't gotta convince,
in love with each other?
You don't gotta convince me.
Right.
Well, two kindergartners like learning about like are we in love or not? That is a common you see that in lots of things.
Right, and it's
that's
so
in
it's
like
not,
Peanuts cartoons. Anyway,
yeah, but it's not like yeah, it's not like.
Is it more risque than Peanuts?
I mean, Peanuts doesn't have LGBT stuff in it.
So. No, but count okay. Let's pretend like that's not risque.
Yes, because she like starts
it's
freaking
not,
out. Right. Well, she's... Well, no, I meant, like, it's more risque than Peanuts, because, again, they play Twister, and she's, like, on top of her, and she's like, ah, bless you, you know? So, that's, you know...
Man, let's stop talking about this. I don't want to watch that show.
It didn't bother me. It really didn't bother me.
I don't know why that show just doesn't grab me. I tried watching more of it, and I'm like, bored. I'm bored.
Right.
I'm like, none of you are all that funny.
It's just cute. Honestly, if it was just normal, I guarantee if it was just normal girls, I wouldn't really give that much of a shit. The dragon jokes would make it different to me.
Also, Peanuts did have LGBT stuff. Peppermint Patty and Marcy. That's long-standing.
I think that's implicit. I think that is implicit, like, assumptions.
It's not explicit, but it's there.
Yeah, you could definitely read it that way. I don't know that that was the intent, but yeah.
Yeah.
You have to read that intent into it. I'm not sure that that was... which you absolutely can very easily, but like I'm not sure that was intentional, but who knows.
Anyway, I didn't even see this debate pop up. It did not come anywhere near my social media bubble, so it I mean, I don't want to say so it must not have been that big because my social media bubble isn't that big, but typically I feel like if it was a big enough blow up I would have heard something and I didn't hear anything.
Yeah, well it's not
so it sounds like it's really open to personal interpretation.
It's just whether it makes you uncomfortable or not. Does this kindergartner being in love with this other girl kindergartner make you uncomfortable? In a obviously romantic, not just we're friends way, like, does that make you uncomfortable? Yes, no. Meh. So, it's kind of like that.
Anyway, someone in the chat says, why not mention the part when Kana gets on top of the other girl?
I did, they're playing Twister, and she, like, falls on her, and she's like, bless you, you know, so... Yeah, if that makes you uncomfortable, I understand.
It sounds like it could go either way on this.
It didn't bother me, but I understand if it bothered you.
Anyway, that show's... okay. Anyway, spring's coming soon. there were a few things that I wanted to talk about this week in terms of news. We're coming up on the release of Ghost in the Shell, and there's, like, new trailers out. And, I feel like the last positive person on Ghost in the Shell, like, no one's, like, condemning it, but they just released another trailer, and I guess, like, there's some story details that are coming out where there's a little bit of a, like, mysterious past, kind of a backstory thing going on.
They were gonna go that route.
I mean, I wasn't expecting the script to resemble Oshii's version at all. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't expect it to resemble that. Only in the skeleton, and only so they can get to those scenes, those iconic scenes that are from the first movie, like the camo and the water and the jumping off the building and the shaft of light and the computers and the hands on the keyboard. Like, they'll have all that stuff in there because that's part of it, and the geisha face and all that stuff. But I don't really expect the script to stick to it. And so long as it's not painfully fucking dumb and bad and has something to do with transhumanism, I think it's probably going to be fine.
I'm not sure that it will have much to do with transhumanism. Maybe a little bit. Who knows? Or,
you know.
Who knows? The worst thing they could do, so I... No, well, not the worst thing, but
you've
the most...
decided.
No, just... It's not the worst thing, but the given the trailers, like, the worst assumption you could make about the plot that is hinted at in the trailers, is... And I hope this is not the route they go. If they do, I called it, and I'm very sad, and I hope that they don't, this is because it would be the dumbest thing. But it would be bad if the Major's past is that she had a son, and that son is the villain. If that's what they're doing, I'm gonna fucking die. But it might not be. That would just be the... That would be the
is
dumbest thing.
Is that what
thing.
The trailer suggests?
No, it's... Well, the villain...
Are you just like, this would be stupid?
The villain knows her past. So it's... The villain knows her past, and the villain says, you had a family once. So, infer. Yeah, it doesn't mean anything specific. But I just hope it's not like, oh no, motherhood. Like, I hope that that's not what they do. But whatever. My baby is the villain. My baby.
This will dovetail with Scarlett's role as Black Widow in that Avengers movie where she talks about being a horrible monster because she can't have children.
Right.
Remember that? The Age of Ultron.
God. Anyway.
Where we're living right now. Yeah. Age of
is dawn.
Anyway, I feel like I'm carrying water for this thing, but like I don't know. I guess I feel like my expectations are just like I don't really have many other than like don't totally betray any semblance of the themes from the movie. Uh-huh. But Ghost in the Shell is such an ethereal thing that like I feel like you can kind of take it in any number of directions. And in order to make it, like, relevant to right now, mm-hmm. I feel like you do kind of have to change it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Anyway, they're doing, like, an IMAX thing where you can see however much... They're probably showing, like, 15 minutes, whatever they showed at, like, Show West or whatever the equivalent is this year. The thing is that... And I hope this isn't clouding my judgment, but, like, it would be really good for everybody if that movie were, A, good... And B, made a lot of money.
Yeah.
And did really well. That would be really good for this industry. It would be really good for Production IG. It would be really good for Mamoru Oshii. It would be really good for Masamune Shirow. It would be really good for a tremendous number of people that the anime community loves and wants to see more stuff from. Mm-hmm. So, like, I guess I'm rooting for it. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm rooting for it.
Yeah, me too. I'm
not
like
going to sit there and tell you that it's good if it sucks. You know, no. I'm going to tell you if it sucks,
we'll tell you.
I will tell you.
Uh-huh.
I'm just saying I'm rooting for it.
It looks like, unlike a lot of these other anime and video game movies and stuff like that, it looks like a lot of care was taken with the aesthetic. Like, who knows if the script is any good, but the production design on it is very, like... It isn't just derivative. It looks like there's some neat ideas in there. It looks like the effects look decent. Like, it is a nice-looking movie. And it looks like they put a lot of thought into the production design. And that's good. So I hope that the script holds up. So, yeah.
Someone in the chat says they want a 7 out of 10. And I gotta tell you, I like that attitude.
I would take that.
I like that attitude. I like that. I'm going to steal that. 7 out of 10. What a good thing to shoot for. A nice realistic goal.
Yeah. I would absolutely take it.
Yeah, totally. The other thing I wanted to talk about a little bit was Crunchyroll announced that they had 1 million subscribers. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that. We ran an Answer Man column this past week. And I just wanted to point out that I interviewed Crunchyroll back when they were a less than reputable organization about 10 years ago or so. And I was really aggressive on them. You can go to ANN and look up my old interview with the at the time the Crunchyroll people. I was really aggressive with them, and they, you know, and the funny thing is they announced they had this million viewers, and a lot of the feedback I got were people bringing that up, like, oh, guess all you have to do is start out illegal, and then you can. I gotta be honest with you, like, in the beginning, I was super, like, skeptical and really hard on them because they started out the same as any other bootleg stream site. That's how they got their start. They legitimately put their money where their mouth is this entire time. They kept their promise. Yeah. They really did. You don't really expect that out of any giant corporation, especially one that grew as fast and as rapidly as Crunchyroll did. But those guys kept their promise. They changed the whole industry, and now, like, our jobs are easier as a result of it. We have access to everything from the anime season. I've been doing this for 17 years now. Total. My career has been 17 years long now in the anime industry. And what they have done has been, in my opinion, pretty much a universal good. And I just wanted to point that out.
Right.
The other thing I wanted to point out was how small the anime industry is, because Hulu has 12 million subscribers, Netflix has 75 million subscribers, Amazon Prime has like 63 million Amazon Prime subscribers. Anime is a pretty small business, which means your voice matters. Your voice matters a lot. This is a tiny little industry. So keep that in mind. We're congratulating, after all this time, Crunchyroll passing 1 million subscribers. It's a big milestone for anime. That's huge. Just put it in context a little bit. You are part of something that is, your voice is valued, I promise. I promise.
Right.
Anyway, I think we can actually move on to Twitter questions.
Yeah.
All right, you ready for them?
Yeah.
We got a few this week. Oh, hey, back to this subject. Rogue of Space wants to know, for both of y'all, who's your favorite character in My Dragon? Maid Dragon.
Maid Dragon.
My handmade My Dragon.
Yeah, the Toru, the main dragon.
Yeah, me
she's
too.
She's just so in love. And works
seems
really
like
hard
the best
to,
character on the show.
Works really hard not to burn the house down, you know.
Yeah. Let's see. Brandon wants to know, either of you still watching March Comes In Like a Lion? If so, what do you think so far? Nope. Dropped it like a bad habit.
Yeah.
Are you watching it?
Yeah.
You're still watching it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Tell us about March Comes In Like a Lion.
It peaked in episode 5.
It peaked in episode 5?
Episode
that was
5,
months ago.
Episode 5 was so good, which I talked about on the podcast. It was so good, I would consider it one of the best episodes. I would consider it one of the, if you're picking like best episodes of the year or something, like it was one of the best episodes of the year. It was like a great little short film in and of itself. Ever since then, it's been highs and lows. Sometimes the material is enough to cut through the bullshit direction, and sometimes it isn't. But it goes at a rate of, like, exactly 2 chapters an episode, and they just stop. It's about, like, it's weird, because it's, like, workmanlike and way too artistic at the same time, but that shaft, in general, it's like, well, this isn't really inspired, but it's covered in 20 gimmicks a shot, so, you know. I don't want to badmouth it, but it's, like, it's, like, a decent story. It's not great, but it's, like, a decent story struggling under really pretentious... That word is a bad word, you know, but it's... But every once in a while, it has a purpose, and, yeah, I would say the direction on March is sort of pretentious, and so that's a shame. But, like, it's interesting. There's some good qualities in there, but it's not, like... There's nothing that I'm dying to discuss. It's... a boy's journey through family dysfunction and depression and learning to take care of himself again and play shogi. But but beyond that, it's just not a whole lot to say.
Yeah,
the pacing's killer. Like,
I lost interest when they introduced all the... Like, it had a really good depiction of depression, and that was kind of the only interesting thing about it to me, and then it didn't do anything really interesting with that after the first couple episodes, so I dropped it.
Mm.
I mean, I didn't know you were still watching it, so I guess I'll find out about the end eventually.
Well, I mean, like, I didn't mention it because there's not really much to mention. It's, The pacing really is the big killer on that.
Yeah.
Because it's like, there's not a whole lot of story here, so yeah, like, you need to either wallow in the emotions effectively, which it's kind of half and half whether they're effective or not, or, like, or give us more of a goal we're headed toward. And there is technically a goal. Like, there's a tournament that's coming up that gives the show its name. It's called the Lion King Tournament. So there you go. And it comes up in March. So there you go. That's where it comes from. But, like, it's just not... I don't know. It's just, it doesn't have much momentum to it.
Yeah. Well, it felt like it was depression salve for this kid. Like, yeah. This kid figuring out why he's sad.
Yeah, but it's just kind of coming back to that over and over and without really moving.
I don't know why it's so long, is the manga.
Yeah, well, because they're not being very... They're very creative in the adaptation. It's just, here are two chapters. Here's another two chapters of this comic. Here's two chapters more.
Hmm.
Yep.
Christopher wants to know, if Ghost in the Shell movie does great, what anime and manga properties would you be interested in Hollywood adapting next?
I'd shit my pants if they picked up Trigun.
Yeah, Trigun would work.
Shit my pants, man.
Pretty much any...
Shit my pants.
Any of that stuff that's obvious that makes sense. Right. Bebop is such an obvious thing.
It's been in limbo for eons.
Yeah, it's such an obvious thing. Trigun's an obvious
thing. It's all the obvious things that people bring.
I don't think Trigun would... I don't think anyone would make that movie.
Right. Space Western.
That show doesn't seem to have held on to its fan base. Like, it's... There's a little nostalgia for it, but it's not as strong as I once thought.
Well, it's not a... It's not a barn burner, but it has more of a fan base than most stuff its age.
Yeah, all right. I forgot who I'm talking to.
No, I'm just saying. I'm just saying. Like, people still bring that show up. Like, I would say it's on the same level as Slayers, where it's not a barn burner, but people definitely still care about it. Like when they announced like Slayers Revolution or whatever.
I would put it above Slayers.
There you go. But yeah. But it's about on that level.
Saw Vash Coat at an anime convention just the other week. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
It's a perennial.
Still Vash Coats out there.
Yeah. Well, and Wolfwood crosses.
Represent, my friends.
It's never the girls, though. It's always...
I want to see the landfill full of Vash Coats from the 90s. Just a giant stack of vinyl. Just burning pleather and vinyl.
As far as...
Fucking Joanne's fabrics, upholstery fabric. Just...
Anyway.
Mountains of it. Let's see. Stefan wants to know, would you say that the other shoe has dropped with interviews with Monster Girls, or could it undo its harem trappings? Again, not watching. Are you still watching?
Yeah, it's not, what's the word? I don't know that there's another shoe to drop. No, I don't know that there's another shoe to drop. Like, nothing really changed. It's just, it is two things, which don't seem compatible, but kind of are, but just results in sort of a shruggy, pleasant slice of life thing. It's like a really thoughtful take on, like, you know, intersectional identity politics and stuff like that, like using it as a metaphor in a really good way, talking about like inclusivity for like students, like how students need to be protected, like with special needs need to be protected and that kind of thing. Cohabitating with a plot where all the girls happen to be in love with this guy, which is totally useless and adds nothing. Like, it just adds that you could take it out and have the same show and it would be a better show. But it's not creepy, it just adds nothing. It just wastes time with occasionally, oh, and he's so cute. Like, it just doesn't make sense. It kind of undercuts their characters and it doesn't really add anything to the show. So, because they're not competitive with each other over him, they're just occasionally like, yes, I'm also in love with him, you know. And it's, yeah. But, like, so those two things exist in a show together, making it, like, less than it could have been, but it's still perfectly fine slice of life, whatever.
Hmm. All right. Let's see here. Angel X03 asks, where the heck did Kimono Friends popularity explosion come from in Japan?
That's something I would like to know. What the... what the blue hell?
I guess it's kind of a My Little Pony sort of a situation.
Is it?
A little bit. We have an article on this coming up pretty soon. Next week, we'll have something out on Kimono Friends. But yeah, it's weird. Suddenly selling. It's selling really well. I don't know if they're going to like relaunch the mobile game that it was based on. Or if
surely
they're like,
they are.
People like this?
Yeah,
oh
sure.
My God.
That would be a hilarious story if that happened.
Yeah.
That would be great and funny.
I mean, that would ultimately be like, that would kind of be the point of putting the show out. Anyway, like, you didn't finish the game, you have the show, and then the show takes off, so now we have a guaranteed game.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, let's finish it. Yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I only saw the very first episode, but, like, it was just... ignoring, so I'm going to completely ignore the hideous production values when I talk about it, because let's just pretend that doesn't exist, and, which is, it's definitely ugly, but anyway, but, like, the writing is just, like, a preschool show, like, not even My Little Pony level, but, like, beneath My Little Pony level, like, a bit on Sesame Street or something about, like, here are some animal facts, and let's walk to another area.
Like, this episode is brought to you by the letter L?
Yeah.
Like, that simple? Like, for four-year-olds?
Yes. The first
more episode. Than My Little Pony?
Yes. My Little Pony has, like, jokes and stuff. This is, like, this seems like edutainment. I don't even know why it has exploded. People just want to fuck the serval girl? I don't know. Like, it's like, oh, suddenly cat girls have taken on new meaning with the serval, which is a, you know, exotic wild cat. Suddenly this is different. I don't know. I don't know.
It's a mystery. Mm-hmm. Jairus Infinity says, thoughts on the latest episode of Handshakers taking some visual cues from Mighty Number 9? Was that intentional, or just no, pizza explosions?
Pizza explosions. Okay. What's funny is, so there's fire effects, and they're like copy-paste fire effects, but you can see the blurry border. So, like, you know how the orange extends beyond the fire when there's flames, and there's, like, orange smoke? So you can see, like, this border around the orange color that comes up from the flames. So here's the flames, here's the color, and it's, like, jagged border over the color that comes off the flames in the overlays. It's like, stop, what are you doing? Somebody stop Handshakers. It's so funny. Anyway.
Do you think they're going to fix that show for the Blu-rays, or just be like, look, this is why people came?
Only 10 people are buying the Blu-rays.
Man, those reviews do really well for us. Yes. Like, our top six shows is like Dragon Ball, Naruto, Scum's Wish, Tanya, which is dropping, and Handshakers. People...
Well,
those reviews.
The Chaos Dragon reviews did really well, too. And it's like, everybody talks about, like, the Chaos Dragon of a season, because it's just the nickname on ANN, anyway, the nickname for the worst show in any given season. Mm-hmm. But they aren't all Chaos Dragons. Like, the worst, like, Taboo Tattoo isn't going to do really great numbers. But, like, every once in a while you get a stinker so bad.
Taboo Tattoo reviews did well for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
they did good.
Well,
James Beckett, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know Big Order did pretty good, but, like, so I mentioned
people like James.
Things.
People like James, but yeah.
I'm mentioning the wrong things. I should mention less memorable, bad shows, but I don't remember them.
Gunslinger Stratos.
Right. Gunslinger Stratos nobody read, because it wasn't the right kind of bad. Handshakers is, like, it really is very rare. Like, it's just a very rare type of incredibad, that exists.
Okay, let's see here.
He asks for them. Somebody said James loves those bad shows. Oh, he asks for them. Don't you ever catch him lying and saying that he's just so put upon, because he asks for it. Literally.
All right. Final Fury K wants to know, I saw Ghost in the Shell in theater subbed. This was the 1995 version that they re-released in theaters recently. And I actually got this question a lot. Like, a lot of people complaining about shitty closed caption subtitles that were, like, not a good translation or whatever. They're, like, from some old re-release of the movie. Huh. There's another re-release happening next month. I have to imagine that, because I saw people, like, walking out of the screen. The subtitles were so bad.
Huh.
So I assume that, you know, when they do this again in March, like, before the actual live-action movie comes out, that those subtitles will be fixed. But you should make sure that Funimation hears from you. They're going to love me for saying this. Make sure Funimation hears from you about those subtitles, because I'm sure they don't want people walking out either. So, yeah.
Right.
I didn't go. I've seen Ghost in the Shell enough times. Thank you very much. I have that movie basically memorized. Yeah. Let's see here. Also from Final Fear K, what are the chances that Scum's Wish shows up on regular Amazon Video? You know, if they're smart, they'll just put it on regular Amazon Video and give people access to it.
Yeah.
If I were the production committee on Scum's Wish, I would go to Amazon and say, hey, how about not putting it exclusively behind your thing?
That Noe Tamina deal was a thing.
The show.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that Noe Tamina deal, I'm convinced, like, buried.
Wheeling and dealing for some reason. Go on.
Well, I'm convinced that deal, like, buried Cabaneri. Because people did talk about it, but it should have been talked about more. It's not about the quality of the show, because you know, the quality of the show didn't seem to matter very much for like Guilty Crown and stuff like that. And Titan, it got buried, you know.
Yeah. Kaylin Evergreen wants to know, is Willis Frame one of those shows that has terrible faces on background characters in HD? No.
No, it's actually a very, it's a really, really solid production.
It's a Sunrise production, my friends.
Well, it's basically like when Bones was just birthed off of Sunrise to make the Bebop movie, a lot of the staff from Bebop went over there, and over time they've become dispersed, but this is before they all got dispersed to, like, four different studios.
Yeah, that team, I mean, I know it's Bones, like, but, like, that team was,
you know,
like,
how, like, Aladdin looks really good, or, excuse me, Beauty and the Beast looks really good because they had, like, Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin had, like, this very specific team, and then it began to
except
dissipate.
For some scenes, yeah.
Yeah, it began to dissipate over time with the Lion King and Pocahontas and stuff like that.
Yeah, that reminds me. We should talk about that. Okay, yeah. We'll talk about live-action Beauty and the Beast. We should talk about that shit. We should definitely talk about that shit.
That's going to happen.
We'll do that at the end here. Okay. Also in Final Fury K, did you guys get that Utena manga box set? Nope. They're not going to send me one either. So if I want that, I got a pony. I might do it. It's really pretty. Mm-hmm. It's a gorgeous box.
I never read the manga, but I didn't like what I heard happens in it, so I never read it.
It's not as good as the show or the movie, mm-hmm. But it's a pretty box. Dollar Bang wants to know, is there a certain snack or a meal you like to eat while watching anime? Jacob, your answer is corn dogs and Dr. Pepper.
That's not what I like to eat. That is what I eat out of habit because it is a
But you don't like to eat it. This is an important distinction.
Well,
because
it's not like, oh boy, I'm going to treat myself. It's, oh boy, time to shove calorie down my face hole while I watch the TV. Like, I don't eat corn dogs as a treat. It's just like, here's garbage lunch that is easy to prepare that I eat on a regular basis.
That you eat every single day.
Every
Jacob
other day.
Eats
every
two
other day.
State Fair frozen corn dogs every day.
Stop it. You're exposing my secrets.
Every day. I have to go to the grocery store and buy them.
Yeah.
I have to go to the grocery store and buy State Fair hot dogs. Corn dogs. Frozen corn dogs.
You pull the box
out. I have to haul this giant frozen box of corn dogs out of the freezer, dump it into my cart, and the cashier's always like, hey, I love these corn dogs. And I'm like, they're for my husband. And they're like, whatever, man. Whatever. Let me tell you, when I weigh 275 pounds, how much fun it was to constantly be buying corn dogs, and they're not for me. Do you know what that's like when you weigh almost 300 pounds?
I'm sorry.
They're not for me.
I'm sorry. You pull, like, the box of corn dogs out of the freezer, and you feel your left ventricle slam shut in protest.
Yeah.
No!
Yeah, it's over.
I will give you a coronary. Put those back.
Yeah, big time.
No. I just told my heart to shut up and eat it anyway.
That's it for the Twitter questions.
Quiet you. I don't need you.
That's it for Twitter questions.
I need your opinions.
But let's talk about live-action Beauty and the Beast. So they opened a preview of this at Disneyland, and we went over to Disneyland for Valentine's Day this year. Happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
And we saw this thing, and, like, Beauty and the Beast is, like, one of your, like, all-time favorite, like, number... Like, a lot of other people, it is, like, your super favorite.
It is literally the first memory I have on this planet Earth. It's not even the first movie I went to see. It is that, but it is also my earliest memory as a human being in this universe. So, yeah.
Right, so this was the beginning number, right? It's the opening number, you know.
Bell.
Yeah, that's the song. Mm-hmm. And you had a lot of thoughts, and I'm inviting you to share your thoughts on the live-action Beauty and the Beast, because you had a lot of thoughts on this, and it was like a seven-minute sequence.
Hose.
Yeah.
Zach's, like, got an umbrella.
Yeah. No, it was, you were, it was, there, it was all very, but I feel like you have a good sum up of what people can expect from this thing, and I feel like a lot of people are super curious.
Okay, right.
We got a good look at this thing.
Yeah. So we saw it was Belle, and then there was, like, a jump cut to the Belle reprise, which is going to come, I'm sure, later in the movie. But it was all that. It was, like, 10 minutes. And so here's what you can expect, Beauty and the Beast remake. The production design is
this
really
This is a
beautiful.
YouTube reaction video.
So the production design is really beautiful. Like, if some aspects like the CG Beast bothered you, or the design of the objects bothered you, like, that's probably not going to change. But otherwise, like... It's not just, like, like backlot with whatever on it. Like, the color design is really good. The costume design is amazing. The production is like, we haven't even seen the Beast Castle, but it seems like it's going to look as good. If it looks as good as the town, it's like, okay, this is a really, really nice live-action rendition of these things.
Too bad they shot it like it's a soundstage.
And they shot it like... this director, this motherfucker, does not know how to shoot a musical.
This provincial backlot.
His life. So, yeah, so that's the issue. For the most part, the actors are doing their best. The guy playing Gaston is woefully miscast. But whatever, just if you can kind of get past that. He's woefully miscast. First of all, he sounds extreme. First of all, he's not buff enough. He's like normal-ass Aeropostale model.
Make
American Eagle pants.
He's so bad.
And he
is the worst.
He's not good. And he's also really smart.
Upset. Gaston's the best character in that movie.
Yeah, he's really smart. He's like obviously smart and theatery. And he's like, I'm pretending to be a dumb jock.
Yeah.
And he's like, no.
I'm so stupid.
Drama freshman.
No one buys it.
drama
freshman.
Anyway. So that's unfortunate. But all the rest of the casting is good. Emma Watson's doing a good job. And again, it's a gorgeous movie. The renditions of the song, the re-recordings of the songs are good. It's,
There's one problem. There is. This is
your
a major
peccadillo.
Problem.
Look, I didn't have a problem with this.
I gave it a big thumbs down just from this. But there's a line in that song when someone says, I need 6 eggs. And then there's a dude... who's like a scruffy old guy who comes and goes, that's too expensive. And that's my favorite line because I hear it in my head anytime I see anything that I think is too expensive. Like, you're at the store and you're like, these Honeycrisp apples are $3 a pound. That's too expensive. Like, I hear that in my head. And in this movie, they have, like, a French lady singing it. And it doesn't sound... And I'm like, that's not exactly what I remember, so it's not good.
Right.
And it was also shot like they were on a backlot.
Right, so
it is super backlighting. Like, I expected to see the Universal Studios tram go by in the background.
Yeah, so the point I'm getting to is the production design is fabulous. The direction is, like, the most uninspired. I don't know, how do you choreograph and shoot a musical number? Like, there's so many, like, what, why? Why did you do that choices? Like, Belle has this outsized, like, ugh, reaction to Gaston, and it's shot by cutting to her in the foreground, blurry, making the ugh face that we would like to see maybe at a different angle, and then walking out of frame and staying on Gaston. So it totally kills the humor, the intended humor of the moment, and, like, it just seems like a weird choice. And then in the bridge where she's like, oh, isn't this amazing?
Yeah.
And she's supposed to be talking to the sheep or whatever. Like, she's obviously talking to somebody. She's not talking to herself. She's trying to share.
The camera angle is here. It's
here.
It's here.
And looking up
the whole
her,
time.
And it's spinning around her body. And
from
she talks
this
to fucking
angle.
Nobody.
Yeah.
And Emma Watson looks like she doesn't really know how to, like, she's trying and she's good in the role, but, like, she doesn't really know how she's supposed to read this because the lyrics are obviously she's talking to somebody. She's not talking to herself. And she's, like, speaking to no one as the camera spins around her in what's, like, a horror movie shot. And
so this that you're getting right now is the Disney... Like, this is the experience. Like, walking out of it. That's what you totally get.
And then in the build-up to the end... So this is the last comment I'm going to make. But in the build-up to the end, where they're like, I'll get the knife. Please let me through. Etc. And where they're like... This fish, they smell, Madame's mistaken, or whatever, and they're cutting to different people, but you don't see any of them, because it's supposed to be a big wad of humans where you don't see anybody's, like, reaction. Instead, they show all the reactions, like, the I'll get the knife guy, and, like, those fish smell person is, like, in shot, and it's like, we're not supposed to see them, we're supposed to be focusing on, like, how big the crowd is. And, like, it's showing their reactions, and they're talking to nobody. The guy who says, I'll get the knife, is speaking to fucking no one.
Yeah, it's weird.
And Belle is walking through the crowd, holding her book, like, as the crowd, like, parts ways for her awkwardly. And it just seems so weird. Like, it doesn't make sense. And then they're like, that Belle, and then they end, da-da-da, and there's no cut. It just stops. And then Gaston runs in, like tardy Imhotep in The Mummy 2. Like, oh, is that my cue? And just runs up to Belle. There's no cut. It just the song ends, and then Gaston awkwardly runs up to Belle without anything changing. The direction is not, like, awful. It's not bad. It's not enough to make it a bad movie. It's just, like, you don't know how to shoot a musical at all.
Yeah, and the thing concludes with the big scene where she runs out to the meadow and sings the end of that, big sweeping end of that song. Right. The way the dude shoots it is she runs out to the hill, stands in place, stands perfectly still, sings the song, the camera's just spinning around her.
Spin that camera.
And she's just perfectly still, and it's obvious that the background is fake, and it's obvious the hill is real, but she's just standing in front of a composite shot. What? Like,
yeah.
Wah!
Why? These directorial choices are like, why? But on the plus side, casting's good, except for Gaston. Like, even, like, if you don't like Josh Gad, I understand, but he's a perfectly fine LeFou. It makes sense.
Nope.
I know you don't like him, but it's a perfectly fine casting. Disagree.
Emma Watson's really good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's super good.
But yeah, like, it's a really pretty movie. Just like, if you're not like a weird nitpicker about directing and editing like I am, it won't bother
We've
you.
We've seen, like, you can't go into these, like, generalizations.
It's a bad sign, man.
It is. It's the beginning of the film. Anyway.
Oh, and they're going to put the Beast song in. Sorry. They're going to put the Beast song in there because they're going to add songs back in for the musical. The Beast song is, like, really hard. Like, the musical on stage drags during the Beast song because it's not a good song and there's not a good way to stage it. It's kind of difficult. He's just sort of talking to himself in the room. So I'm like, oh man, this is going to be fucking bonkers in the movie because they're not going to know how to stage this. If they couldn't stage Belle, which is easy and exciting to stage, that should get your dander up if you're a choreographer. Like, oh boy, how do I stage this? I don't know what they're going to do with the Beast song. So anyway.
We'll find out.
That was Beauty and the Beast.
We got 15 minutes out of the 7 minutes that we saw. So when we see the full 2-hour film...
4 hours, baby.
4 hour podcast.
4 hours,
dissecting
baby.
Every scene, and then when they release The Lion King, I'll do it for that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. You'll never shut me up on that one. Never.
Well, okay. I mean, what if it gets a good director like Jon Favreau and not like the guy who directed Twilight, who's like, oh, paycheck it is, you know?
Yeah. Well, anyway, we'll see. Before we wrap up, we should see if the chat has a question for us. After all that rambling, does the chat have a question for us before we take off for the day? Anybody? Vice and Luna comes back on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget. Mm-hmm. Anything from the chat? Since the decade is about halfway over, are there any anime from the past 5 years you could see making it on a best of the 2010s list?
The past 5 years.
Death Parade would be on mine. 5 years ago, it was 2012? Yeah.
Yes.
From the New World?
Yeah. Well, is that?
2012.
From the New World. Yeah, I can think of a bunch of stuff, but I wouldn't want to, like, spoil that whenever it happens years
I'm just saying,
years
like, that, you know, just yeah. stuff off the top of your head.
I can't say Death Parade would definitely not be on
there. Definitely not be. But Blood Blockade would be on there. And
not in the top 10, probably. Out of the 10,
what?
Out of 10 years? 10 years of content? Blood Blockade's not in the top 10.
The 2010s. The 2010s.
Oh, so out of 7 years. Probably not. Like, I love Blood Blockade, but it is a messy work. I don't think it's...
So number one, Haybot.
right. You know, I mean, like...
Yurikuma? What? What's on this list?
Penguin Drummond... Penguin
what
Drum
is on the
probably
list?
Better. Penguin Drum's probably better than Yurikuma, TBH, so... What?
You
I love
wouldn't
both
have Yurikuma
them.
On there?
I love both of them. I don't know. I'd have to think about
Man,
it.
You,
I'd
sometimes you
together.
Baffle me. Space Dandy now, I don't know.
I would put that on there.
I don't know. I need to rewatch that show. I should rewatch that soon. You know, we should podcast. Maybe that'll be our next series discussion.
Yeah.
We don't have one of those lined up, so, you know, we should really discuss what our next series discussion is going to be.
Yeah.
Should we talk about that? So we were going to do Sound Euphonium for the longest time, but we kind of decided we didn't want to do it without Nick. Nick Kramer,
right.
And he's not available to record anytime soon. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of shoving that off out to pasture. Mm-hmm. We're going to go on to something else.
Right, we'll just
wait till Nick's available. And the thing is, by the time Nick's available to come on the show, we might want to talk about something else. So I don't want to like box him into that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Sorry, once again, I didn't keep a promise. I break your heart every time.
It's
you keep
fine.
Coming back. You keep coming back. Any other questions from the chat? Let's see. Do you think that two anime that aren't originals by KyoAni, May Dragon, a Silent Voice, is enough to say that it's a trend? So they're doing adaptations, I guess, now.
Well, I mean, like, didn't they always? KyoAni was an adaptation.
Free was an adaptation?
Yeah. Well, Free was not exactly an adaptation. Like,
Starting Days.
Yeah, but there's spin-offs of, like, traditionally the QAnon model is a novel that either won their contest or was, like, picked from an early publisher's thing, and then they just make up their own story based on that thing and make it run longer.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't think there's any hard and fast rules. Lots of their stuff is adaptations. I don't, you know.
I'd have to see a list.
Yeah.
See what he's talking
like,
about.
I think Nichijou is an adaptation.
It is. Yeah. They don't do a lot of originals. Yeah,
I don't know that that's a thing. That's not a thing, as far as I'm aware.
KyoAni original?
Like a pure KyoAni original.
Tamako Market, wasn't that?
I think, I don't know for that one might have been a novel thing, but I think Amagi Brilliant Park was...
Yeah, that was def... I'm not gonna... You know what? I don't know what I'm talking about. So me saying like, oh, sure, that one,
I'm pretty sure Amagi Brilliant Park was not based on anything, but what, you know.
Canon's based on a dating sim. Yeah. Let's see here. People are suggesting shows that we should discuss. So that's coming soon. Somebody asked when the next Super Nerds episode is. I want to do one of those on video. Mm-hmm. All those guys have webcams, so I don't see why we can't do it on video. I'd like to get that put together. Yeah. Okay. Thoughts on the new Samurai Jack trailer? So I was never into Samurai Jack. I never thought it was particularly interesting. Genny Tartakovsky, however you pronounce his name.
Yeah. Right.
His action cartoons, like, I liked the Clone Wars stuff that he did. That stuff was pretty good, but his action direction, I kind of prefer his comedy stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I my favorite of his is old, is Dexter's Lab, but Dexter's right. Lab is so absurdist that it's just, like, it always ends by having not a joke. Like, Dexter's Lab always builds to, that's not a joke, and then it just ends. It's great. It's just so awkward. Anyway. But yeah, I enjoyed Samurai Jack back in the day. I haven't been, like, stoked about an update because I guess I just wasn't. I mostly enjoyed Samurai Jack as sort of like a genre pastiche thing, which it occasionally delved into. And, I don't know what the new one is, but I think it's more storyline driven, so I don't... I'm just going to wait to hear what people say about it, but I haven't been, like, anticipating it.
Well, I mean, if you have it on TV, I will sit down and watch it with you. Yeah. Let's see here. Jordan Muller wants to know, do you think the 2016 Berserk show would have been among the best of that particular season if it wasn't for the garbage animation? So they went back and traditionally animated most of that, right?
I don't know about most of it, but big swaths.
Yeah. So, like, I'm looking forward to seeing the Blu-ray version of that show. Yeah,
where they
who's making it available. I guess Crunchyroll will make it available at some point. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that, because that sounds like the show that I wanted. It sounds like they did make the Berserk show that I wanted. But
Eventually.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it still has a bunch of CG in it. Like, Zod the Immortal is just
I'm not expecting
be a big
perfection, man.
He's
but
a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people like, eater.
I'm not expecting perfection. Anything that show was below the threshold for acceptable for me. It was below, like 25% more traditional animation would take it into the level of acceptable. Mm-hmm. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah. As for whether it would have been,
it's got a season two coming. So
yeah. As for whether it would have been like the best of the season if it had been hand drawn. No. It's I'm enjoying the post eclipse material. Like it's good, but it's like. It still has the pitfalls that like post-eclipse Berserk has, which is the full invocation of the supernatural is kind of not as good as the more low fantasy that it started out with, and it straight up just destroyed all the character development that had been built up to that point for a hard reset, like except for Guts, but like everybody else's character development is like boop, don't have that no more, so they have to build up new characters, so like it's not what it once was, so it's, like, kind of trying to stagger back to its feet, and it's, like, there's a lot of good ideas in here, but it feels like we're having to pull ourselves out of a big what happened, you know, a big shock. So I don't know. It's not as endearing. It's having to work to win you back over because it's just all new ideas now. It's, like, a completely different show, which was the point of the eclipse, is, like, now that's over, and now here's, like, The Hobbit is over, here's Lord of the Rings, and it's like, but if you liked The Hobbit more... I guess I'm not sure where I'm going with this metaphor, but it's just a completely different story now.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I like this question. Chocolate or vanilla?
Depends on what I'm eating.
Both. The answer is both.
Right.
Like, if you're at a soft serve stand and they have chocolate, vanilla, or twist, mm-hmm. what do you get?
You get the twist.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Right.
Chocolate brownies with vanilla chip. You know.
Yeah.
Vanilla.
It's good. You get both. Are you going to see the new Kong Skull Island movie? Yeah. Like fun. That looks like super fun.
Yeah. The trailer, we were watching the trailer, and I was like, this looks really entertaining.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Totally.
Which is not something I say about most trailers that we see, because it's just like the same factory sludge that a lot of Hollywood movies have become. Everything looks like Transformers.
Franchise product.
Franchise product. Here is Power Rangers in the style of Transformers.
Why do people think that movie looks good?
It looks like fucking hot garbage.
Power Rangers looks bad. It doesn't look good.
Power Rangers looks terrible.
It doesn't look good.
What's wrong with you people?
What's wrong with people? Why are they like, that looks like, what? No.
Ew.
Anyway. What? The trailers, they're like funny bad.
Yeah. They're like, is this a joke?
It's like a joke of gritty reboots.
Yeah.
And I don't get it, man. But then again, okay, I don't have...
What is that? So that
I don't have Power Rangers nostalgia. I just don't.
The texture on their suits, what exactly do you call that? It's like chrome. It's like a car chrome with the little sparklies in it. But it's like those bouncy balls you would get in, like, in the 90s out of a dispenser, out of, like, a toy dispenser.
Sure.
That are, like, it's
bouncy,
like...
Bouncy balls?
Yeah.
Super ball?
Well, it's a super ball, but it's, like, specifically the blue and purple and green of, like, a car with little sparklies in it.
Like Ramon from Cars?
Yeah.
Kind of like that?
That's what the color of the suits is, and it's like, really?
It looks like the Superman suit from that Tim Burton Superman movie that never made it.
Yeah, the Nicolas Cage one.
The bio suit?
It's that color, and it's, like... Yeah, pearlescent or whatever you call it. It's like, really? That's what you went with? You're going to make them look like cars? Like Transformers?
Yeah. Ugh. I'm not... I mean, maybe, like, maybe we'll see that. Like, if it... Depending on the reviews, like, if it's like, let's go have a good time and
if it's
and
really
laugh,
boring, then maybe not. But
not if it's boring.
Yeah.
That's the cardinal sin. No boring bad movies. Boring bad is bad. Let's see here.
Last, after 10,000 years, I'm free. It's time to bore the shit out of children.
If that line's not in the movie, it is. Of course it is.
It's gotta be.
They have to have that.
If they didn't put
it. And there'll be,
But she's gonna be say it's...
And there'll be, like, get me teenagers
she's
with attitude.
She's gonna say it seriously and sexually. She's
after 10,000 years,
I'm free.
I'm free. And ready to fuck.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's gonna be it. It's time to conquer Earth.
Yeah, Jesus. Let's put a stop to this. Okay. Actually, I think I'm going to go ahead and call it there. All right, live chat. Hey, everyone. Thanks for coming by, Ancast. We will likely see you next time at same week, same day of the week, same time, all that stuff, Thursday, 5:30. Thanks for hanging out, man. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to the chat for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, Google Play Music. Leave us a comment, a review, you know, whatever the drug is.